The electric vehicle revolution that Rivian wants to ride depends on who has the power, literally the electricity. The country's uneven charging infrastructure will continue to be built out in years ahead. We've already seen dozens of charging stations in Bloomington Normal, courtesy of the now defunct EV Town initiative. As Rivian gets ready for production in Normal next year, WGLT's Ryan Denham was curious about what comes first, EV adoption or the charging infrastructure. He spoke to somebody with the answer, Dan Bauermaster, the program manager for electric transportation at the Electric Power Research Institute in the heart of Silicon Valley, California. They start by talking about Rivian.
Taking a step back and look at the numbers, the top three best-selling cars in the U.S. year after year, in fact, it goes back decades, have been the big trucks from the big three, the Ford F-Series and the Chevy Silverado and its GMC twin and the Dodge Ram or the Ram truck now. So you could say their market is a smart one to go into if you're looking at the numbers. The product has impressive specs with the range and the performance, so that's it. Could be exciting to see how that pans out in the real world.
What is unique about what Rivian is doing with its battery packs and the skateboard that it's created?
They're definitely taking advantage of one of the advantages of doing a ground-up electric vehicle. What I mean by that is an electric vehicle doesn't have a traditional gas motor or often even drive shaft, so what it does, it frees up a lot of room in the traditional chassis to kind of reorientate where the rest of the parts go in an electric vehicle. That's primarily the battery and, the battery control system, et cetera. So what that does is, and we've seen this with other manufacturers, it really frees up design and engineering. So what that means is, a lower center of gravity kind of spreads out the mass, and, referred to in the industry is kind of like a skateboard chassis. So not only does that help improve the specs of the vehicle, but also you basically have the guts, the skateboard, and then it also gives the manufacturer flexibility on what the body is that goes on top. And, we've seen this with other manufacturers too. But, Rivian hasn't said what else they're doing, but they have talked about they have five or six other vehicles that they are considering that could be built off the same chassis. So more to come there, definitely.
Well, one of Rivian's main selling points has been the long range of their first pickup and SUV. Around 400 miles on a single charge, potentially. And I'm curious as to how long that will be sort of a selling point. Will that sort of range or even beyond that become, sort of the norm in the next 5, 10, 15 years?
Well, what you can see happening, I mean, there's kind of a joke in the industry is, you ask someone today what their ideal range is, whether it's gas or electric, and they give you a number, and then that becomes the new norm. Then you ask people again what they like, and it's, the old number plus, call it 20% or 30%. So, I mean, the point is we humans always want more. That's a good thing. Keeps everything innovative. But I guess the point is that Rivian is doing what some other electric vehicle companies are doing as well, or what other car companies are doing with their EVs, and that's offering various size batteries. So, Nissan is doing that with the Leaf. Tesla does it. There's a few other companies that have said they're going to offer, kind of multi value packs. In my opinion, it's a smart business decision that these car companies are doing, because it lets the customer kind of pick and pay for the battery size that they want or need. And that's, at the end of the day, it's all about flexibility. With the kind of the market segment of pickup trucks and SUVs, you have other, call it use cases, or just call it uses by the customer, whether it's, towing a boat or going to, a national park, maybe a bit further off the normal path of a day-to-day commute. So, having a longer battery option in that kind of price class, to me anyway, makes extra sense.
Electric vehicles like the ones that Rivian is going to be making are going to obviously rely on the electric charging infrastructure that exists all over the country. I mean, you could charge in your own home, but there are going to be times when you have to kind of charge on the go. How would you characterize kind of the state of the current EV charging infrastructure in this country as of today?
You can actually charge your electric car, even the big ones, off a normal 120 volt, a new, grounded and safe wall outlet. In fact, that's what my family and I did with our first two EVs. That's all AC charging, and that's what most people will do on a daily basis, especially if you have access to covered overnight parking, not even covered, but your own overnight parking. Then there's the question of what about the road trips? And that's where you get into more of the kind of what we think of today is like the gas station type experience. that's what's known as fast charging, and Rivian, like a lot of the other fully electric vehicles, can do that as well. And that's intended right now to be more of a, like, when you stop for, you know, stop for a cup of coffee, or you stop for lunch, if you're stopping for 15 or 20 minutes, you basically get a fast charge at that time that you, you know, stop for a snack, you stop for a quick meal, you know, your car basically will charge up, you know, 60 to 80%. That's the vision of fast charging. And as far as the actual state of that fast charging, there's various groups or various kind of tranches across the U.S. that are doing this. First of all, the utilities have $3.7 billion, that's billion with a B, charging infrastructure, not just fast charging, but all types of charging, either proposed or approved in front of the regulators across the country. Of that $3.7 billion, some of that involves the utilities actually owning and maintaining the charging station, and some of it is a utility will basically pay for everything up to the charging station, and they'll give a rebate to the whoever owns the site, say it's a shopping mall or a coffee shop or something like that. The next tranche of charging infrastructure is largely a result of the Volkswagen diesel settlement. That's about $2 billion. Volkswagen is setting up a subsidiary called Electrify America. They're putting in about $2 billion of fast chargers across the country, and those will be accessible to everybody, not just Volkswagen. The third tranche is Tesla. Tesla is famous for their supercharging closets. They have about 13,000 charging stations and 4,000 locations across North America, but Tesla uses a different plug than the rest of the industry. And then the fourth and last tranche of charging infrastructure is what's been done for, say, the last, like, 7 or 8 years, largely with a combination of taxpayer money and private money. Those are smaller networks for not just fast chargers, but quite a few fast chargers.
Well, what about kind of visibility of the public side of EV charging infrastructure? I mean, one of the reasons that people feel confident driving a car is because they can, you know, you can, like, see a gas station every mile or two. I wonder if EV charging stations need to be more visible so that people, you know, who are thinking about buying one, you know, see them all over the place, and it gives them kind of that peace of mind that may help adoption. What do you make of that?
You know, EPRI's been doing research on electric vehicles for almost 3 decades now. And to that exact point, we did a study in Japan more than 10 years ago when EVs were first coming out. About, it was basically, they launched, Mitsubishi launched an electric car, and there was not fast charging stations. And we did a study of people driving along with the local utilities there. And then the Japanese utility put in a bunch of fast charging stations, and they did studies again of where people charged and all that. And lo and behold, it's exactly what you said. Everyone loved having the idea of these public fast charging stations, but no one used them. So it kind of became a joke. It's like, well, maybe some of these fast charging stations just need to be paper mache, just for that. I mean, again, that's not obviously what we're going to do. But the point is that we all like, and there needs to be some kind of safety net. Let's not be, you know, I don't want to be too flippant here. There needs to be a safety net for public charging. But at the end of the day, you know, most people are going to charge at home or work. But, you know, one of the advantages of the EV, it's just like your smartphone. You wake up every day and it's fully charged and ready to go. So it's, or you step out of your office and it's fully charged and ready to go. So it's different. And that change part is hard. But once people shift to an EV or a plug-in hybrid, then it's one of the things that they actually love.
You know, I've often heard that this whole thing kind of framed as a chicken or the egg. You know, what comes first? Is it going to be electric vehicle adoption and then we build the charging infrastructure to meet it? Or do you build out charging infrastructure and that aids adoption? What do you make of that dichotomy? Is it, given home charging, can we just have adoption happen and have that go ahead of charging infrastructure?
Yeah, so I think you need both. Like I said, you know, you need a safety net. You need to be enable the folks that can't charge necessarily at home if you live in an apartment or if your workplace hasn't put in charging yet. But I do, you know, especially in the last 6 to 12 months, like, you know, as this charging infrastructure is going in. And now, granted, there's U.S. auto market when it comes to EVs is kind of split into two realities. One reality is there's about a dozen states that follow the California zero emission vehicle standards. And in those states, there's about 40 EVs that customers can pick from. And then in the ones that don't follow California, the supply, the customer choice is much more limited. You know, it's down, I mean, I can double check the numbers, but it's about a dozen or so. You know, when you think about scale and you think about cost, a lot of great work has been done by the automakers on making electric vehicles, but most of them have been in, like, just regular hatchbacks and sedans, which is a declining part of the market. So you know, that's the bad news. It's like, well, you don't have plug-in EVs in the body, for the most part, in the body styles that American consumers want. The good news is that if you look out to 2023, there's going to be about 120 different EVs to pick from based off the automaker's announcement. And to me, what's more important than that, number, I mean, that's a big number. The part to me that's more important is like more than a third of those will be, you know, SUVs and quote-unquote crossovers and even a couple pickup trucks, one of which being Rivian. You know, today, yes, there's not as much product choice to pick from for EVs. But if you, again, if you look ahead, you know, a good 3 years or so, there's going to be a lot more.
So electric vehicles are obviously perceived to be more environmentally friendly, but you know, the past couple of years, I've seen obviously plenty of articles about a sort of hidden environmental impact. After all, the electricity has to come from somewhere. So unless that's nuclear or wind or solar, you know, you could be looking at a carbon impact somewhere in that production of the electricity, even if the car itself doesn't emit carbon. So I don't know, what does the science really bear out within that issue?
It's important to say, like, yes, you have to generate electricity from somewhere, and yes, you have to, you know, a vehicle, whether it's gas, diesel, or, you know, kind of, you know, electric powered, you know, you have to mine that raw material from somewhere. So everything has consequence, and that's important to say. EPRI, together with other partners, has done extensive research on this. There's kind of two categories of pollution, at least the way I see it. There's the greenhouse gas, you know, which is the whole climate change, and EVs, hands down, are better. In fact, like, kind of the rough bogey is, even if you have a grid powered by 100% coal, which, mind you, that is, I think, basically nowhere in the U.S. right now, even if the grid is 100% coal, that's equivalent to the greenhouse gas of a 36-mile-per-gallon car. And, you know, I'm sure, as we talked about earlier, like, 36 miles per gallon is great, and most, you know, Tahoes and 4Runners and Escalades and Explorers don't get 36 miles per gallon. So that's, like, worst-case scenario. So that's, like, one part. So as far as the carbon, electric vehicles are better enough. And then the next part, which doesn't get as much attention, is the air quality. So it's basically all the little fine particles that come out of our exhaust pipes. You know, they impact human health, whether it's, you know, oxides of nitrogen, or, you know, you can go through the whole list. But it's basically all the dirt and grit that comes out your tailpipe. Now, yes, when you generate electricity, there's also similar emissions. But a couple of things: that's a smaller amount, easier to regulate, because, you know, fewer power plant smokestacks versus exhaust pipes. And also, it's further away from human. I mean, there's so many studies out there that have shown this. Basically, like, the closer you are as a human to an exhaust pipe, like if you're walking on a sidewalk in a busy street, that's obviously way worse for your health as far as that air quality versus like a power plant that's hundreds of miles away. Yeah, that power plant is still impacting air quality, but A, it's less, and B, it's not a direct impact on human health.
That's Dan Bauermaster, the Program Manager for Electric Transportation at the Electric Power Research Institute in Palo Alto, California, speaking with WGLT's Ryan Denham. You can follow all of WGLT's coverage of Rivian at our website, wglt.org/Rivian.